Good, it's a good point. Okay, I'm ready if you are. Good morning. It is September 8th, 2010. It is 10 a.m. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission meeting at our regularly scheduled biweekly meeting in the Public Service Commission hearing room on the 12th floor of the North Dakota Capitol. It's Kevin Kramer with Tony Clark and Brian Kolk for today's meeting. It's a rather short agenda, but it's meaty nonetheless. Just want to welcome everybody for being here and tuning in, and turn it over to my colleagues for opening comments as well.
Just good morning and welcome.
Good morning and welcome, and I'd like to remind folks that the North Dakota State University Bison went down to Kansas and whooped up on Kansas. We outscored them 2-1, so that's good for North Dakota.
Almost literally 2-1.
I look forward to game this weekend against Northern Iowa.
This week the offense will score 3 points. No. Okay.
We scored twice as many
yes,
as they did.
Yes, yes he did. I'm all for it, by golly. I think it's wonderful. All right. With that, we'll go. I'll move passage of items in the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. To the regular agenda, KC1. I move the commission adopt the findings of facts, conclusions of law, and order in the application of Hess Corporation for a certificate of site compatibility, issuing certificate of site compatibility for energy conversion facility number 18 to Tioga Gas Plant, Inc. for the existing Tioga Gas Plant and the proposed addition to the plant in Williams County, North Dakota, case number PU 10-120.
Second.
This is a, as I recall, this is the first sighting that we've done since I've been on the commission, anyway, of a hydrocarbon or of a gas plant facility. Most of our sightings have been pipelines, transmission lines, wind farms, but this is the first one for a gas plant. And it was an interesting case. We received the letter of intent on April 13th of this year, and then the application for the certificate on June 25th of this year. I think these dates are important because it illustrates how quickly this process moved along. But we held our public hearing in Tioga on August 30th, and today are voting on the order. And I think it's testament as much as anything to the company's preparedness and preparation for the facility. But the other thing about it is that while it is a significant investment and a significant development in North Dakota, when you consider a gas plant that is preparing to produce 250 million cubic feet per day of natural gas, an investment that is, it was testified, is now $500 million in the community of Tioga, that's obviously a major project. At the same time, it is really an addition to an existing project. The Hess plant, of course, was the first facility of its type in North Dakota, built in the 1950s, went into full production in 1954 with a nameplate capacity of 120 million cubic feet per day. The testimony at the hearing was that they've been producing more like 80 million cubic feet per day. So while it's a significant expansion, it was already a significant plant in the first place. It was, of course, built prior to North Dakota's siting laws. What triggers the requirement in this case to file an application with the Public Service Commission for its jurisdiction in siting is the fact that they had to go outside of the existing footprint. They acquired an additional 21 acres from Tesoro, who owned the acreage around them, and that in and of itself triggered the requirement for our jurisdiction. We have siting jurisdiction over facilities, gas facilities that produce a minimum of 100 million cubic feet per day. I have to give the company more credit, however, than simply meeting the minimum standard of the law in this particular case, because by all accounts, they could have done a number of things without having to come to the Public Service Commission within the existing footprint, and yet they found it prudent and I think responsible to bring the entire case before the commission, bring us up to speed on all of their plans with regard to the not just the new flaring facilities, but all of the facilities. So we appreciate that very much. As I said, it's a $500 million proposed investment, increasing their nameplate capacity from 120 million cubic feet per day to 250 million cubic feet per day. The new process that they're utilizing also allows them to capture ethylene. There's a lot of specifics, scientific specifics and things that were obviously part of the filing. But we had the hearing. There were no protestants at the hearing. There were some folks there in support of it, including the couple of legislators that we're very familiar with. And all in all, it was a good day in Tioga. It was good to get up there. It was especially good to get up there when you saw how low the ceiling was for flying in and out. But at any rate, we got in and out just fine. With that, I don't think there's a lot more to add, unless my colleagues would have some comments. You know, the small footprint really makes it while it's a significant investment and facility, it makes it a rather easy facility at the same time to site.
Some of the other issues that we got into at the hearing, and it was a very good hearing, related to just impact on the community, sort of other environmental and human resources in the area that sometimes we don't discuss as much at some other siting hearings. But it especially related to the fact that we have a community that has a lot of activity going on in it right now. There's a housing shortage in that part of the state as it is. And we had questions about what will the impact of the construction of this facility be on that part of the state when we already know that there are some concerns about housing and infrastructure. They indicated that they thought at the peak of the construction that it would be about 300 to 500 people that would be helping construct the plant. They did indicate, however, and this was comforting to me, that they do have a plan to bring in a temporary camp, or you sometimes hear them called man camps, to take care of the housing and infrastructure needs for those individuals, so it doesn't become an even greater strain on that area. In addition, of course, we always have questions about infrastructure development, things like impact on roads. A major project like this obviously has lots of pipe and trusses and all sorts of things coming in over those roads, and they did indicate that they would be bringing the roads back to at least the same condition that they had been prior to the construction.
There are also some good discussion up there about the timing of permits, different air permits that would be needed as they shut down one stack and started up the other. I thought that was very, very interesting. And the company really, you know, they do a lot more work than just come in front of the Public Service Commission for our documentation. And the second thing I wanted to add is one of the things that really helped with this was having Mitch Armstrong was our designated legal, if you will, on this. And this is his whole life. So when the paper came back, he was able to get through it. I mean, this is a quick turnaround. But a majority of it is because of the company did a good job, but also because we had the staff availability to have dedicated time for the last week to get this document prepared so we could review it and vote on it. So I think that model is something that will continue, I would hope.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 KC2. I move the commission award a contract to Dave Titus Excavating, Inc. to extinguish coal outcrop fires at numerous locations in Slope County using funds from the 2010 AML Coal Fire Suppression Grant.
Second.
You'll recall that we had this issue earlier where we issued the intent to award to Dave Titus Excavating. There were two other bidders who did not protest or contest the the bid is the low bid was $20,975. We issued the award to contract the intent to award a contract on August 24th. The there are at that we know of right now there are five sites in Slope County, somewhere between 12 to 15 miles south of Medora, that are currently on fire. Four of those sites are federal lands or Forest Service lands, otherwise known as national grasslands, and one is on private land. And so this will allow us to issue the contract and then get them out there to suppress those fires. And, of course, we are getting to that time, although it's been so wet. But the result of this tremendous growing year that we've had is that when it does dry out, of course, there'll be a lot of fuel out there for potential grass fires and things. So it's important we get out there and get those fires put out here as soon as we can.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Ends the items in my portfolio. Do we have one here, TC1?
We do. I was feeling left out,
yeah,
so I asked Sue.
Well, how did I just noticed that? I
asked Sue to scrounge something up, and she threw it on.
By the way, I, well,
go ahead. TC1, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE10-575 granting the request of Walhalla Bean Company to operate a 20,000-bushel grain warehouse at Fairdale, North Dakota, effective immediately. I further move the commission grant the request of Walhalla Bean Company to operate the grain warehouse at Fairdale, North Dakota, on an as-needed basis.
Second.
Walhalla filed a license application to operate this 20,000-bushel grain warehouse at Fairdale only as on an as-needed basis. The facility is going to be used to receive dry edible beans during harvest. Now, this is a facility that's licensed by CHS, and as you probably know, they have a facilities-based grain buyer license, not a warehouse license, so it does not meet the criteria for establishing a receiving station. Therefore, they're obtaining this grain warehouse license. And in addition, they're requesting, as per statute, they will operate it only as needed.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Good morning. Item BK1. I move the commission adopt the order on sale of renewable energy credits authorizing Northern States Power Company to sell to credit its ratepayers for the sale of renewable energy credits through its fuel cost rider tariff, case number PU1019. This is, like Kevin was talking about, for the Tioga plant. To my knowledge, this is the first time the commission has dealt with anything like this. And what I'd like to do is just kind of walk through the case itself, but quite honestly, I think there's some far-reaching policy things that will come out of this motion. So basically what we have here is on January 4th this past year, NSP filed an application for approval to implement a pilot program in North Dakota to sell its excess renewable energy credits, or RECs, with the proceeds going back to the customers using the fuel cost rider, or the FCR. On April 6th, the three of us got together, held a work session to discuss the application. And then April 28th, we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, provided until June 11th for comments and a request for a hearing. No responses were received. The real issue here is that the issue that we considered was whether or not to allow for a waiver of North Dakota Administrative Code for the inclusion of the revenue from the sale of RECs in the fuel cost rider. When the fuel cost rider was set up, I don't think that we really ever envisioned a need for these kind of things. So, you know, the basic premise was, do we modify our own code, if you will? NSB submitted a proposal with four different elements, and we ended up with an order that has five elements. I'll go through the order here in a minute, but basically they were similar with what they asked for to what we ended up with. The biggest thing is how to allocate the money back to the consumer, if you will. Just for, I guess, a point of reference, currently XL's or NSP's RECs that are allocated in North Dakota right now is around 300,000 RECs, and they assume that number could grow as high as 450,000 RECs by 2015. And that 2015, that's kind of like the high end of this pilot program, if you will, that we go from current time till 2015. When you lay it out, the value of RECs, it fluctuates quite honestly, and a current value of REC is about $1.50. And so that's one of the challenges that as we work through this pilot program, trying to figure out, you know, the company will need to figure out when is the best time to sell these, and that'll be one of their decisions. But what this basically sets up is a framework. So with that framework, NSP, the order says NSP shall implement a pilot program in North Dakota to sell excess RECs allocated North Dakota jurisdictional customers. All allocated RECs must be considered excess, and no RECs may be considered needed for compliance until the year 2015. The third provision, NSP shall return to customers 90% of the applicable net revenue generated from REC sales and retain 10% of the net revenue as an incentive to maximize the value of RECs in an immature market. This was one of the areas that is different than the proposal that NSP submitted. They submitted that 85% go to the customer and they keep 15% for their overhead, if you will. But the commission, during our work session, we talked about South Dakota has a similar program where they do a 90-10 rule, and we felt that was appropriate, that we come along in line with South Dakota, not to create an advantage one way or the other. And the fourth provision, NSP shall include revenue from the sale of RECs in its fuel cost rider for the duration of the pilot program or until the effective date of rates filed with NSP's next general North Dakota rate increase application, whichever occurs first, i.e. a rate case. And the fifth provision, NSP shall file an annual report with the commission documenting the results of the REC sales and the report can be included as part of its annual progress reporting requirements toward meeting the renewable energy and recycling energy objectives as required in North Dakota Century Code. So that's kind of the way it lays out. At current value, if they were to sell their RECs, an average customer would see 15 cents in their bill reduction per month, or about $1.80 per year. So you can see it's not really a large amount, but it really does set the stage for this REC discussion. Quite honestly, the whole REC idea, I'm kind of uncomfortable with the way this thing all evolved. And I think what we'll see out of this is that, you know, based on this order, our staff is already looking at changes inside the fuel cost rider, looking at, my opinion, to perhaps make the selling of RECs permanent, to where if there's RECs that our company has, they should be selling them to benefit the consumer. But this really, I think, is that, you know, MDU and Otter Tail didn't comment on this, but I would suspect they'll have similar type discussions. So we'll, my vote would be to approve this order, and we'll just track the pilot program and see how this all works out.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Item BK2, I move the commission adopt the order approving an amendment negotiated to an existing interconnection agreement between Turtle Mountain Communication, Inc., and Mid-Continent Communication, case number PU10387. If you remember, we actually had a hearing scheduled on this case that was to take place August 4th. We scheduled that hearing back in June, but amazingly enough, the companies decided to work this out before the hearing. So on July 8th, we received a request for an interconnection amendment agreement, which set forth the terms and conditions which the Turtle Mountain Communication and Mid-Continent would operate in Bisbee, Dunseith, and Willow City exchanges. Typically, we put these out on our web for 90 days, but in this case, companies asked that we expedite it, so we put a request out there for comments. We did not receive any comments back by the closing period. Everything seems to be in order.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And that concludes the items in my portfolio.
Very good. A few announcements. We do have an informal this afternoon to discuss the service area agreement between Otter Tail Power Company and McLean County, or McLean Electric Cooperative, for a service area agreement in the Garrison area. It's been a while since we've had one of those. We also have a formal hearing tomorrow in Killdeer, beginning at 1 o'clock at the City Hall, on the Bridger Pipeline, crude oil pipeline siting. And then next Thursday, another formal hearing at the Oliver County Courthouse and Center on the Oliver Wind 3 230 kV transmission line. Also of some interest, I would say, next Tuesday we have a work session on the Otter Tail NSP, Advanced Determination of Prudence for CapEx 2020 application. That has been hanging around a long time with some questions ever since the formal hearing on the settlement agreement between the advocates and the companies. Other than that, everything's pretty basic, and we'll have another meeting before any of the other stuff, near as I can tell. Are there any other announcements?
The only other update I'd give that's happened between last regular meeting, and this one is a quick update on the Eastern Interconnect States Planning Council project that kicked off in the Washington, D.C. area. Last week, myself, Jerry Lean, and Sandy Tabor from North Dakota attended that. It's basically all 40 states in the Eastern Interconnect are getting together to talk about transmission planning and what the grid might look like. It's an interesting collaborative when you're talking about transmission planning for more than half the country's geographical mass.
That, questions?
First of all, when we talk about RECs, we're talking about, it stands for renewable energy credits, does it not?
That's correct. Roughly, one REC is equal to each megawatt of hour produced or purchased, renewable energy produced or purchased.
Megawatt hour produced or purchased?
Renewable, yep.
Okay. And Otter Tail, XL, has 300,000 of these presently?
Presently, they have, here's the way they worded it. Right now, they have around 300,000 allocated to North Dakota customers, and it could be as high as 450,000, they estimate, by 2015. So there's a range right now that...
Are these all earned from renewable energy generation in North Dakota, or is it...
It's our allocation based on our jurisdictional allocation, the 5%.
whatever they have, they turn out 5% of that is allocated back to North Dakota.
Okay, so it's 5% of their renewable energy portfolio across their system.
Correct.
Five to six,
which raises a kind of an interesting point. And one of the things about the order that, be interesting as we move forward, you notice that I want to make sure that it doesn't overly imply that in 2015, when the North Dakota objective supposedly is to be met, that now we're just going to assume that the renewable energy credits that should be applied to the objective have to be applied to the objective, because I still maintain that an objective is not a portfolio standard. And I just as soon see them sell those renewable energy credits to people who are willing to pay for them and credit it back to our customers than to somehow feel good about ourselves.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to get to. We don't have a renewable energy mandate, do we?
We do not.
That's correct. And if we were to tell Xcel to hold these and to not sell them for the benefit of consumers, it would effectively turn what is a goal into a mandate.
And so is it your position that they can sell these how they please?
As long as the money, at least 90% of the money, comes back to ratepayers, yeah.
I mean, do you have any control over when they sell them or what price they get? Because I imagine that the market for these is not very...
It's not robust.
...comprehensible.
Right.
Right.
This just sets
the
stage.
Yeah. I mean, I would view it as a typical prudency issue, right? I mean, if you have something that is has value and it's to the ratepayer's credit and you do a really poor job of marketing it, to me that's, in theory, something that could come up as a prudency issue. Now, we have built an incentive into this and said that they get to keep 10%, which should encourage them to market them in the best manner possible.
I mean, what is the market for these things?
Right now, it's about $1.50 per rec was the number they gave us at the work session, number we scrubbed out.
Isn't that what's that based upon?
Based upon some state that has a renewable mandate, and they would have to go out and purchase that from NSP to meet their own state's mandates. And so, some states that have those, some don't. It goes back to this whole cap and trade debate, that if you force people to do certain things, you can drive up cost to make states feel good about themselves. And if some state out in the East Coast or West Coast has to meet the renewable mandates, they would come to Xcel or someone to buy these, and that would drive the cost potentially up or down.
But that's the company's estimate of what the market is bearing currently.
Is it the company's decision whether or not to sell?
I would think so. Back to the prudency, what Tony talked about, that when they would come in front of us in the next rate case, if they sold all these at what we would consider a correct amount, it could come back.
Right. I mean, it's right. We don't run utility companies. They run the utility company. But what they do is always subject to check by the commission. And if we as part of a rate case were to go back and look and say, hey, you sold these all for 50 cents, but the market was $2, that would certainly be something we could review.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is if they wanted to, if you were to compare it to, a farmer holding wheat waiting for the price to go up, is it within their discretion to hold these credits for as long as they think it's prudent in the marketplace to get maximum value for them?
Well, I think that goes back to the same question. If they want to hedge their bets, hoping they're worth more in the future, I guess we'd have to see what the actual cost when they did sell them, when that appropriate time came in front of us.
All I know is that it's been my observation that regulators are the smartest investors in the world after a mistake's been made.
Well, that's that was the point I was getting to, is that, aren't they? I mean, it would be very difficult, I would think, to sell or not sell an asset like this when you know that someone else is going to come back at you in the future with perfect hindsight and say,
yes.
You
yeah,
sold
it's
this.
No more different, but it's no more difficult than any other issue we deal with on commissions, right? I mean, from resource procurement to what you buy your natural gas at for your plants to
natural gas is probably the closest.
How do you get credits? How do you accumulate them?
By either every megawatt you produce that's renewable or every megawatt you buy that's renewable. So Xcel's case, I suspect it's what they are producing in renewable.
This is a pilot program. When is the expiration date, or does it have one?
The reason I use those dates of 2015, that's kind of the the bracketing right now that I think was implied in this order. But it, also in the order, it talks about the next time they would potentially come in front of us in a rate case, this would then be part of that rate case.
Well, RECs aren't a pilot program themselves. I mean,
just
that's something
program.
That's established
the FCR
in...
FCR is what's pilot. Yeah, right. Utilizing the fuel cost...
Okay.
You know, the fuel cost adjustment.
The RECs are actually set up in state law in a number of states, including ours, and they're... And they're monitored by a group called the Midwest Renewable Energy Tracking System,
MRATS. But the pilot aspect of this is passing the earnings through
fuel cost adjustment.
Not the sale of the
themselves. One of the things, too, that kind of the next step of this is that I think we're going to review our own administrative code on what can be passed through the fuel cost rider, because I would suspect Otter Tail and MDU are looking at this as well, so maybe we change the rules that apply so that we don't have to have this similar type of thing for those two companies.
I mean, the other two investor owns don't have this something similar to this, do they?
I think they all have RECs. When MDU produces a megawatt, they would have a REC that would be associated with it.
I guess I'm talking about selling them.
No, they don't.
See, the issue that's a little unique is, of course, that this 2015, it's my understanding, that's when our 10% renewable objective is to be met. So everything between now and then means there is no renewable responsibility. You know, there's no obligation to produce or buy up to 10%. So why we don't want the company hanging on to them, nor does the company want to simply hang on to these renewable credits to meet an obligation that does not exist. 2015, when this objective is to be met, then we'll have to have a discussion about whether it's still an objective or whether it's a mandate. And
it's
you know,
whether it's an obligation then.
That's right, to which I'd say I don't believe it is. If they wanted it to be an obligation, they would have called it an obligation. But we'll have that debate, I'm sure, in a few years, or somebody will.
Well, the if I recall, it is a 10% goal by 2015.
Right.
And if the 10% goal is met, I'm trying to figure out what relationship this has is to selling the credits, because the company can say,
well, they
yes,
can.
We've met this goal, and what does that have to do with the sale of credits?
My understanding,
because you couldn't sell them, you can't use them twice. And so in other words, you either apply them to our objective or you sell them.
So if they're going to count them towards the objective, then the process that it goes through is called retiring the credit, which means that it cannot be sold in the market. It just becomes something without any...
And to
monetary
me,
value.
If there are people in Wisconsin and Minnesota that want to pay our companies for renewable energy credits to meet their obligation, and we can apply that to our customers' bills, I'm all for that. That's what I mean about I'd rather have the money than feel better about myself. So at any rate, that's, I think, a cultural difference between us and our neighbors.
But that is one of the keys, that our consumers need to be benefiting from these type of projects, and if this is a way that we can benefit, then... And more power to North Dakota to keep our rates the lowest in the country.
Well, can you explain why these are worth something?
Because somebody somewhere is willing to pay for it. It's a classic market of selling, of buying and selling something that does nothing other than clear your conscience, near as I can tell. I mean, people are paying for the right to pollute on the one hand, and on the other hand, they're being paid for renewable energy that they produce or purchase.
It's really a creation of state legislatures. I mean, the whole reason for these RECs is because you have individual states with renewable portfolio standards that actually do have mandates, and so there needs to be a way, and they're different in different states. I mean, they're not uniform by any means. So if you have different states with different mandates, utility companies that operate in all of them, and an understanding that in some regions especially, they can't get all their renewable energy from within their state footprint, these RECs are a creation of that fact and a way that utility companies can buy indulgences, basically.
Well, you go back to, you take an example, an East Coast state like Connecticut, let's just say they have a mandate of 20% and they have no availability for wind or solar or hydro, whatever it might be. They can go buy these RECs from NSP, and then they can stand up and say, we now have 20% of our power from renewable sources because they bought those RECs.
Okay, and so basically the reason that these have value is because there are some states that have mandatory targets for renewable energy, or the utilities have mandatory targets that they have to meet for renewable energy, and a utility can meet these targets in part by buying the actual renewable energy of other utilities.
Right. Exactly. And to the degree an XL would sell it to some other utility, then XL couldn't count it towards their own mandates in, say, Minnesota.
I'm puzzled why there isn't a fairly robust market for these things already.
I think it's because there's a phase-in for most of these mandates. You know, it tends to be 10% by 2015 or 20 by 2020.
Okay.
Dale, what I found, just throw this out there, what I found interesting, too, in researching this is that some states don't count hydro as renewable. So this is just gets very confusing as you go. I mean, to me, hydroelectric power is a renewable source. But some states, when they develop their code, they don't let their own states even use their own sources. So this gets really convoluted quickly. And I think back to the point of it's a phase-in and there's still a changing definition of what renewable means to different people in different states.
The fire suppression grant, the figure is $20,975.
That's correct.
And what's the name of the company, please?
Titus Excavating.
Titus Excavating?
T-I-T-U-S, isn't that
correct? Yeah, T-U-S Excavating?
Inc., yeah.
Where are they based? Okay. And there are how many fires to be put out?
There are five that we know of.
In Slope County?
In Slope County. Four on grasslands and one on private land. There were seven, I think, when we issued the intent to award, or maybe prior to that even. But
do we know how these fires began?
I think there was a grass fire, how long ago, Jim, that ignited some of the coal veins that were exposed, and they've just been smoldering ever since. That's become fairly common out there in the grass.
Do you know how long these fires have been burning?
When did they start? Do you remember?
I'm not sure on that. It was a couple of years ago. Probably 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Pretty good grass fire.
So these have been smoldering for several years.
They have.
Okay. Is smoldering a more accurate
term? I think smoldering is a good term for it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And the way to extinguish them is to dig them up?
You dig them up, excavate all of the coal that's burning, make sure there's none left in there. You separate that out, of course. You might let it burn out in a pile somewhere, and then, of course, reclaim the land.
We do our job too well. Where is there going to be scoria for all these roads?
Well, that's just it, you know, in the Badlands.
Are there global warming demerits that we're getting with these? The gas plant, it's a $500 million investment, and when do they intend to begin construction? Do you know?
Well, there's a couple of phases to it. I think the flare stack, aren't they going to start right away this fall? I'm looking, Pat, isn't that right? The main construction, they're not going to begin until after the breeding season for some of the birds in the area, which is like after July of next year, I think is when the main construction is scheduled to be. Straight through.
Do we have any idea when this will be finished?
We do. I'm sure it's all in the order. If it's not, it's in the application.
2013. I remember they had down to the quarter. It was either second or third quarter.
Yeah.
Is it possible to get an order,
yeah,
copy of the order?
Absolutely. You can have my copy right here.
Great.
But I think the application might be more helpful. We don't post those.
No, I was looking for it yesterday. It was the super secret.
And they're so hard to email because, as you know, we have to email them in chunks.
Yeah.
They're so gigantic.
Yeah. Thank you. And do you know if MDU and Otter Tail are going to be coming in with their own ideas for selling RECs?
Our hope is that we can have our own adjustments to the fuel cost rider rules and standards, if you will. So what we did for NSP would apply to those companies as well, so they wouldn't have to come in with their own.
Right. I think the same logic applies, and I would hope that the companies, having seen this, would not go out and start retiring credits immediately.
And this would mean, what does this mean for the customer?
Well, if the RECs were sold right now for NSP, the average customer would get a rebate of about $1.80 a year if they sold the current RECs at current value.
And the current value, if I understood you correctly, is
about $1.50 per REC.
Is basically arbitrary at this. I mean,
correct.
The company is guessing as to what.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's their best guess at what
the right word. Or,
yeah, I don't know if that's.
I
their estimated market value as of today is.
Their estimated market value is basically.
I guess. Yes.
What someone else is willing to pay for.
Yeah, well.
They've probably done some research around different areas, and it's probably
I'm sure
pretty accurate.
They probably have a website that maybe lists what.
Okay. Could you talk for just a moment about the Bridger hearing tomorrow?
Oh, sure. You know, Bridger, of course, is a company that's owned by True Oil Company, and they have a number of pipelines in western North Dakota. This line covers three counties. It goes from McKenzie down to Billings County, and of course with Dunn in between, I guess is how it goes. It's got a number of on-ramps. There'll be truck on-ramps as well as some interesting, I think, transmission destination components to it. Because it's a north-south line that runs from the north part of the Bakken through the south part of the Bakken, it has the capacity to put oil into three different markets. One, it can load on to the Enbridge system in northwestern North Dakota, which, of course, transports oil to Clearbrook, Minnesota for distribution and refinery in the industrial Midwest. One, because, again, the Bridger line, they have a line that goes to Baker, Montana, and that's where probably most of this oil would tend to head. And then from Baker, Montana, down to the Guernsey hub in Wyoming for refining in that area. And then there's one line off of this Bridger that'll be off the Bridger line that'll go to the Tesoro plant in Mandan, giving producers that utilize the Bridger line three possible markets, which I always say changes that supply-demand formula a little bit and gives more advantage to the seller and a little less to the purchaser, which has been part of what's led to discounts for all these years for our producers, is the captive markets that they've been part of.
I see that on the 9th at 5 o'clock p.m., there is the PSC annual golf outing.
Yeah.
What's
you notice that Diller leaves all the time at this point.
Yeah, what's the purpose of that?
Well, it's in lieu of bowling during working hours. I couldn't resist.
So it's just a recreational thing for the employees.
That's right, and there may be, I can't attend it. I think we just put it on because there's always a chance that at least two of us may be there, and then we want to be covered.
When you go play golf, I mean, do you guys play together?
Typically, there's really only two teams, so if all three of us are there, two of us are going to be playing together. But
I don't think we've ever all three been on the same team. Right.
Oh, no.
Two of us have never been.
I mean, what is your, no. How good a
Brian's golf? Too good a golfer, so he has to.
Okay, who's the golfing stud of the Public Service Commission?
I think Josh is.
Josh.
We have some studs on the staff, Diller is the instigator. He's the instigator of all golf.
So he's a good golfer, or he likes to play?
He likes to play, and I think that from time to time he's good, yeah.
Okay. It's hard to get
say
folks
Scott,
around here.
I just heard this morning that Kara's husband played for the Minot State Golf.
So that's a ringer that's in the works. Yeah. Scott Sheldon, you know, is quite a basketball player and quarterback star, and so he's got potential.
Who among you three is the best golfer?
Kevin is probably the – I saw him at Bully Pulpit a few years ago.
I'd be the worst. I got closest to the pin on the signature hole with my 5-wood. Yeah, so that tells you how – yeah.
We're committed.
All 120 yards. Tony's probably the best, I think, from what I've observed.
He's the best athlete in the commission. And a Bison graduate, just for the record.
Thank you.
Being the lowest handicap on the North Dakota Public Service Commission is sort of like being the prettiest horse in a glue factory.
Exactly. All right, we'll recess for a few minutes while we sign orders.
Why golf? Why not bowling?